go to Bible study. And you were a guest there. Yeah, that was, yeah, I loved that. Yeah, I actually have a note from that on there. So
you were listening?
Yeah. Well, I was just playing with
you. I thought we were having lunch.
It was good. Yeah.
I was really good. Yes.
You know, I've always thought minor in the things that are minor, major in the things that are major.
The Bible might not be 66 books long if he didn't repeat himself so many times, but there's some points he wants to drill into your head.
Absolutely.
Love, 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 and Christ is the only way.
Yep.
That, you said, live out the love of Christ every day.
But Jesus is at a dinner party in Luke chapter 14, and we're looking at 24 verses. And man, I tell you what, my man was going off at this party. I mean, number one, he heals somebody that's on the Sabbath and is thrown by the Pharisees. Number two, he gets on them about who they invited and how they wanted the, well, number two, he tells them, y'all want the most important seats. That's not the way you're supposed to be.
Right.
That's going to be the second sermon. Then number three, he tells them, you invited the wrong people. And you should be inviting people that can't pay you back. And then fourth,
these are different sermons. Each of these are going to be their own sermons.
It's almost like, all right, I'm sitting here in my mind's eye imagining, okay, we ain't even got to the table yet. And he's already hit them up with, he heals a man with dropsy is what the text says. And then he because they were watching him to see, okay, is he going to heal this guy?
Mm-hmm.
Then he hits him up with a couple of questions such as, well, let me ask y'all something. If you had a son or an ox fall in the ditch on the Sabbath, would you get him out?
Mm-hmm.
They don't say anything.
Yeah.
And then it's basically, well, what's wrong with showing compassion and mercy on the Sabbath? And they're quiet. And basically, mm-hmm. he's showing that the Sabbath is made for man, not man for Sabbath. And then what we're going to talk about is, look, there's nothing wrong with doing acts of compassion and mercy and prayer and meditation. I hear people all the time say things like, oh, I just don't have enough time to read my Bible. I don't have enough time to pray. Well, God said, set aside one whole day for seeking me. I mean, yeah. Well, I tell you what, we were just talking about last week's show and just the addition of Kenny for your thoughts. And, man, it's been fun having you, man. I appreciate
it. Thank you.
It has. It's just been a blessing to me.
It's been awesome. I've enjoyed it. It's such a fun conversation.
Yeah.
And I've really, really enjoyed having you on here and appreciate you taking the time.
So you're doing a lot more editing.
On myself, getting me out of the way. Yeah.
Well,
oh no, hey. I think what I got trickled out is Greg said, "Yeah, Kenny will push back on you." And I said, "Well, that's what I like."
Yeah, so, yeah. Hey, don't let the preacher just push you around.
That's right.
Just,
yeah,
you kind of
cantankerous.
Well, speaking of push around, so let me welcome, and this is the other 167, Garrett Lill, with Kenny Lewis and our fearless leader, Ben Pierce,
leader,
from
just,
Pastor
just
Fuquay Verena Baptist Church. So if you're new to the show, and as the marketing genius of this whole thing, I would hope somebody is, but I always say welcome back.
Yeah.
Hopefully somebody's new.
Yeah.
So basically this is an hour of just, if you could just have kind of a fireside chat style with your preacher and ask him, what did you mean by this on Sunday? Or, hey, my buddy asked me if this is a sin. And, you know, just whatever comes up.
And it really is. And it's designed to help folks that, hey, we're trying to make it through the other 167 hours in a week, man.
That's right.
Sunday morning, man, we got that in pretty well. We kind of got that one fixed. But then, all right, now comes Monday and Tuesday. How do I make it through the daily grind and still keep my walk, make sure I'm staying fresh, and make sure I'm staying close to the Lord? So that's our goal and our aim each week.
And I think the word that keeps kind of coming back around is real, just being real, a real relationship with God, and talking about the realness of it, because I think that we can talk about how many hours we read the Bible and how many went all of our prayers and all this stuff, but is it real? Speaking of him being real, I don't know if we're allowed to have a bone to pick with the Creator, but if you're allowed to, he's kind of picked on me a little bit. I was thinking about this morning. How do I describe this? So, my 4-year-old Christian, I always tease him, like, take his hat from him, and most of the time he's just playful and he likes it. Sometimes though, he can be real serious, and if he's in one of those serious moods and you're taking that hat one too many times, he gets a little fussy. I'm about to be a little fussy because God, I've joked before that he takes things from the show. Something I said or something you said or something. I don't think he's got me on something you've said yet, but you've only had two chances.
So, yeah,
but he'll take something. He'll take something in the show, and it's like, all right, that sounded good. Now I'm going to test you.
Now let's test it. Okay. Yeah.
Well, last week, I had a fun time with the write-up last week because I was having a hard time getting it out. I knew what I was trying to say, could not get the words out. And then I came here Wednesday night, and Gabe didn't want to come Wednesday night because he said he was kind of shy. And I said, hey, I get it, but, you know, I'm uncomfortable a lot of times. And, you know, I mean, like, honestly, this is my first time on Wednesday night, and I don't know exactly who's going to be there and what we do, you know. I said, but I didn't make him come. And on the way here, it kind of hit me. That's where your growth comes from. You're going to be uncomfortable a lot of times. So then I got back home, and after hours of not being able to get anything down, in 10 minutes, I start writing, if you want to walk with Christ, you better get comfortable being uncomfortable. Flood the whole thing off in 10 minutes. Great. Loved it. Then I go Thursday morning. Go to Bible study. And you were a guest there. Yeah, I loved that. I actually have a note from that on there. So
you were listening?
Yeah. Well, I was just playing with
you. I thought we were having lunch.
It was good. Yeah.
That's what I was there.
I recorded just in case you say something important later. I could. So, so after Bible study, one of the ladies comes over and asks me if I'd be interested in teaching a Sunday school class. Martha, I think, lives the same Martha.
Hey, shout out.
So I said, yeah, sure. You know, I'm always, you know, try about anything. So they're kind of rotating in, looking for new speakers, and thought it might be nice to have a kind of a fresher, younger perspective on things. So for the context of what I'm about to say here, this class is about my mom's age, I guess, is about.
Well, how old is your mother?
Well, I'm not going to say that.
Yeah, I'd say yes.
You would say yes.
Yeah, that's probably in the ballpark.
Yeah.
All right. So
yes.
Well, my wife's in there now. That's why I'm backing off on that. Okay. Yeah. She does listen.
There are some in there that are your mom's age.
Okay. There you go. Okay.
Then there are some that are not.
I'm closer to my mama's age than my age. Keep quiet. Yes. I'd say for the most part. All right. So she shows me the study plan and says, "No, we're pretty flexible, and, you know, but this is kind of this is where we're at, and this is where we're going to have you teach." And I said, okay, I mean, I've never taught a Sunday school class or even really attended that many, but sure. I mean, you know, I've been doing all kinds of stuff that I didn't think I'd do. So I go home, and this is perfect. It's in Genesis. So I just started Genesis. So in a few weeks, I'll be getting to this. It's towards the end of Genesis. So okay. I get the kids to bed, and I'm like, I'm going to go ahead and just take a look at this passage and see. Yeah, I'm not – it's a long way off, but I can let it start marinating a little bit. Right. At least let it get some oxygen. So I open my Bible to Genesis chapter 39, verse 7. Uh-huh. And are you familiar with that off the top of your head?
About that time frame is – that's when Jacob and Rachel and Leah and all that, right? I mean, Genesis 50 is where Joseph is already in Egypt. Mm-hmm. And so it's probably about the beginning of Joseph's time.
The Bible I have here says Joseph and the Potiphar's wife.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Okay.
So
wow, there's a lot of goes on. I guess that's right.
Yep. So as I get ready to read this, I read, now Joseph was well-built and handsome, and after a while his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, come to bed with me. And I'm thinking, wait a minute now, Lord. You've got to be kidding here. So if you haven't, I won't read the entire thing, but on your free time, read Genesis 39, 7 through 21, and imagine me trying to teach this to a class or teach on this passage in front of my mom's demographic.
Indeed.
But I'm not a particularly great teacher or public speaker.
First time there.
And
this is my subject lesson.
And then I'm remembering, now where would this come from? Very first thing I said in the write-up last week is, if you want to follow Christ, get comfortable being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I said, you got to be kidding me right now.
No, I had a similar event like that. I used to teach my grandmother's class. No joke. She was my grandmother. She was in there, and everybody in that class was 85 and above.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a lesson like that, and you're sitting there as a, you know, I was 30, 40 years old, and I'm still, I got to talk about this. Let's talk about some other lesson. Give me something else. Let me talk about, try to teach the Trinity and try to understand it in three parts.
Yeah.
I'd rather do that than, but no. And I think it's one of, and even in that, as uncomfortable as it is, there's some principles there to apply to everybody. Doesn't have to deal with Joseph and Potiphar's wife. It can deal with, hey, how do you stay away from sin?
Mm-hmm.
And it's right there in that text how Joseph, some of the things he decides to do, how he says, I can't sin against Potiphar or the Lord, more importantly, the Lord. And so there's some great stuff in there that'll help As uncomfortable as it is, it applies to everybody, and it doesn't always have to be that situation.
Oh, well, I feel like the Lord's gonna call me out now. I'm gonna study this like crazy. Yeah.
You'll love it. There's a lot of good stuff out there on Joseph.
Yes, yeah, a lot of it's graphic. I mean, a lot of Genesis is pretty graphic, but
that's better than nighttime TV sometimes.
Yeah, I guess so. You're right.
Oh, listen, you read it, some of the things those patriarchs did to each other and how they did it. Man, Dallas ain't never had anything that good.
And I'm not so bad now.
I didn't go that far. I just said primetime TV is you could do a primetime TV show from some of those stories in Genesis, and you'd be like, whoa, they did what?
Genesis is great, but you've got really, really action-packed stories broken up with genealogies that can be a chapter or two long just in those. It's always fascinating to me that every time I've started reading Genesis, and I guess Exodus to an extent too, I always get real confused because it's like, man, God used some raunchy people to do good things there, and that's kind of the point of the rest of the Bible. And in when you think about it that way, but the irony of things like Noah's getting off the boat and he's got the new covenant, and four verses later he's drunk and naked. I mean, like it does not take Noah very long to shift.
Jacob was a swindler. Abraham had trouble telling the truth. You know, when you really break down, and then Peter, I mean, you got Thomas who was a doubter, Peter who denied him. You got Paul who was a murderer. You know, the only one, and I've seen the same thing, it describes all the people God used and said the only one that really would have been on the stick would have been Judas. And look what he did. And so when you really stop and think about it, that's the beauty of grace, and this beauty of the if you will, the spiritual gifts, if you will, of using just average, everyday people. Because that's what God loves to do, is take average, ordinary people and use them in extraordinary ways. Because look, I love Jim Valvano, and I'll quote him. Hey, shout out with that. Jim Valvano said, he was talking in his speech, and he quoted a priest or somebody that came and talked to him when he was a kid and said, God must love ordinary people because he made so many of them. But you can do ordinary people can do extraordinary things. Yeah. And that's the beauty of what God does.
I was going to say that, ordinary people. I might have heard it from you. Ordinary people do. God does extraordinary things through them.
My favorite pastor to read, a old-timey preacher, he wrote this numerous times. He said, God uses crooked sticks to hit a good lick. And what I love about that is, think about it. He ain't got anything to work with but crooked sticks. We're all broken. We're all sinners at best. But yet, that's where and he tells Paul that, you know, where you are weak, that's where my strength comes in. And so there's nothing wrong with that. Hey, to be broken, to be humble, to be, what am I doing here? That's where God can use you the best.
And God uses, ordinary people are. And I remember reading a scripture in the Bible. I know it's in the Gospels, but it might be in Luke. It lists Caesar Augustus, another famous person, Herod. And all these guys had audiences, and they could have done a lot of things, but the word of God came to John the Baptist, who was nobody, to pave the way for Christ. Isn't that amazing?
And you stop and think about John the Baptist, if you're talking about an outsider's outsider. That was him. I mean, he lived alone in the wilderness with, locusts and honey and wore, camel's hair. I mean, you talk about somebody that probably would not be, would fit in most circles. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, that's the one he used as the forerunner for the Christ. And I think that's the way, when you stop thinking about it, it's the way God does things. It's not complicated. It's the ordinary. Don't make things complicated. Keep it the simple people. I mean, John the Baptist, even Jesus. Jesus didn't come riding on a victorious white horse and, oh, look at the king. No, he came on a lowly donkey dying for sin.
You said something towards the end of the sermon on Sunday that kind of encapsulated in one sentence something that it's a lot of what we talk about on the show. It's a lot of what I've been thinking about lately. You said, live out the love of Christ every day. Mm-hmm. And I broke that down and said, live out the love of Christ every day. So make kind of put emphasis on each of those three as a block. Loving Christ is one thing. living it out mm-hmm. is what we've talked about before. Followers versus fans is something we talked about when we named a show that. And you talked yeah. about you don't think Jesus was as interested in more followers or in more fans. And
yeah.
more
he could have got all the followers in the world. Yeah.
Right.
Just keep offering free lunches.
Free meals.
Yeah. There you go.
Everybody bring me your fish and bread, and man, I'll feed the world. And he could have had everybody. I mean, hey, look. Doesn't take much. Yeah. The politics, all it takes is just making sure my contingency is getting some green or getting fed, and they'll vote for me.
Yeah. And you, my favorite way I think I've heard you say it is in church a couple of weeks ago, the difference between admiring the teachings of Jesus and following right. Jesus.
Yeah,
and
there's a big difference.
There's a huge difference. And it's so much easier. So when you say live out the love of Christ, mm-hmm. that's become kind of the way that I say that prayer in the morning, has helped me to represent your love when my interactions with other people
sure.
and just living out that love that he has.
I guess you could be stirred by his teachings, but you can be changed by following his teachings.
Yep. And letting
a lot of people are stirred but never change.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people love them mm-hmm. but they never live them.
Right. And we can sit here, and this is what I try not to be guilty of, but it's so we can sit here and we can talk about stuff, and we can talk a big game, and I can put a nice little write-up together, and we put pretty graphics on it, and I can do all kinds of stuff with it. And if I spend all my time sitting around thinking about God, I'm not getting out and showing that.
Yeah.
And it becomes really easy in our day-to-day lives to think we're doing all those things we need to do, but how many times did you, even tiny little things, like
yep.
somebody had to come pick something up today. I'm trying to clean out my garage, somebody came and picked something up. And just thinking about, okay, well, I could easily just leave it on the porch and leave the $10 under the mat or whatever. But just being, and sometimes if you're in a bad mood, you kind of don't feel like seeing people, or you're in a hurry or whatever. You don't really feel like taking the time. But how are you ever going to share Christ's love at all with people if you don't ever see them?
Yep.
Sometimes it's just as simple as being present and just mm-hmm. having a conversation, saying hi to somebody, little things.
And what we learned from Luke 10 when we looked at the parable of the Good Samaritan Sunday, is it's going to cost you. It's going to cost you time. It's going to cost you money. It's going to cost, if you want to be involved in people's lives, it doesn't come without some kind of sacrifice, because it takes time to be around others, or it takes, and so, yeah, you've got to be willing to do that. And there are times when, hey, I'm driven by the clock more than anybody else, probably, at least in my own personal time. I want to, hey, if I've said I'm going to be there at 6, I'm going to be there a little bit before 6. Mm-hmm. I want to, and we were talking about a staff meeting today, is sometimes we become so driven by the clock and driven by the next activity or the next thing we got to do that we miss actually being in the moment, or actually miss what God may be wanting us to do.
There's an interconnectedness to all this that it's not all about just praying for what's best for me and right. knowing that God knows what's best for me, and he knows which path, this one versus this one versus this one, it's all, he knows what's best for me. But it can also be that they may all be the same for me, but this one is going to really help this person, and this one's going to really hurt something from somebody else. There's something way bigger than we're ever going to be able to understand, and that's where you just have to listen and trust.
That's right.
And maybe don't ask so many questions. I'm talking to me big time on that one. Don't ask why. Just do it. Like,
right. And I think that's one of the things is I always tell people, when you're following the Lord, a lot of times you're not going to get all the whys.
Yeah.
You only get what you need.
Yeah. And sometimes you may not even get all the hows.
Well, and I get that too. And not that it's the same thing at all, but the kids are constantly asking me why. Sometimes it takes me longer to explain to you why.
Yep.
I've got to teach you 17 more words that you don't even know to be able to really answer your question. And at the end of the day, it's not going to change my answer. The answer is this. But I always want to know why. And sometimes it's just because I said so. Do it and move on.
Like, when you said you had to give them 17 more questions or definitions, well, maybe God has to do the same thing for us too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of times,
gotta learn it.
I have followed Christ and I didn't want to, but in the end, it was a good result. A lot of times I've not followed Christ, and in the end, it wasn't a good result.
Right. Yeah. Well, and back to what, one of the things that I'm not crazy about the way things flow with the show is that we talk, I go back and edit it, and after I've listened to it two or three times, it's like all of a sudden, now I really understand our conversation better, and I'd like to continue it, but now we're off to the next thing, because I'm ADD and I've forgotten about that. But kind of following up from last week's show, I mean, that's where that discomfort is. You're going to be uncomfortable sometimes. Yeah. Thursday morning Bible studies. I wasn't particularly comfortable the first time I came there. I mean, I didn't know anybody, and it was, you know, it was all kind of new to me. But what if I hadn't done it because I didn't feel like being comfortable? I mean, I've gotten to know, not just having, I mean,
that's right.
We could have figured out a way to get you here probably on the show without that. Y'all knew each other, but I've met a lot of people from that class that I've really enjoyed.
Right.
And if all because I, to look back at life now in hindsight and think, what if I would have let that get in the way of, I didn't want to do this because I was a little uncomfortable. What if I hadn't? Right. You know, exactly. Sometimes you're going to be put, God's going to put you in some of those situations, but when you look back and see what he did with it, and mm-hmm. you know, not that Thursday morning is way different of an example than some like trials and tribulations mm-hmm. that we face, but sometimes those uncomfortable places that he puts you in are, it's amazing to look back at what he does with them.
Well, go ahead.
Well, I'll tell you, on the other side, you talk about Bible study and you've met people and everything. On my side, Kathy Leggett, because you've taken somebody down to the nursery, is that right? Or she knew who you were, she didn't mm-hmm. know. Yeah, she take, didn't know your name.
I took Christian down there a few times
okay.
early on.
Okay, that's
yeah.
where.
Yeah.
She told me at Bible study, do you know that guy? No. He said, I don't know him, but his children. Will you get his name or introduce yourself? And that's how that started, because you were there. I was there. Kathy Leggett wanted me to talk to you
mm-hmm.
in casual conversation. That's where I'll begin on my side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you can look. You can play out domino.
Never known that.
Yeah, and you can play out domino effects all crazy with that.
Yeah.
And just from the tiniest little thing that you know. So that's why when I say that to my kids sometimes, it's like I can take 45 minutes to explain it to you, or you can just do it. And by the time you do it, you'll know it. Yeah. You know, you'll know why I said to do it. But same kind of thing with him. I mean, it's. Some of the simplest little things, like what difference does it make if I'm at this Bible study or not?
Right.
And I tried twice, but you left. And where'd he go? Yeah, you left early a couple of times.
Yeah, and that could have been because I was in a hurry. Yeah. And it could have been
because
I was bashful.
And you're
on
the other side of the
right.
room at
right.
that
yeah.
time. You're
yeah.
all the way over there, so okay. I'll try next week. I'll really try next week after the second time. So that's how I met you, and I told her your name and everything, so it's amazing how things come together.
And I think, going back, I think one of the things is, oftentimes, we as humans and children, but we as grown children, mm-hmm. we always want the hows and the whys. Mm-hmm. And God's not going to necessarily do that because, one, he wants you to step out and trust him. Right? And if you got all the answers, then you may not do it because, wait a minute, I'm not willing to want to do all that, but that's where he comes and he shows himself faithful, even through the difficult times or the struggles. I use this illustration a lot, and I love it. It's one of my favorites. When I get in the car, it won't be tonight because hopefully I'm leaving before dark tonight. but if it's dark, sometimes in the winter, it'll be dark when I leave, and I turn on my headlights. I can go ahead and tell you, my headlights do not shine all the way to Holly Springs where I live.
Mm-hmm.
Although I don't live in Holly Springs, that's my mailing address. My headlights don't shine all the way to the house. My headlights shine just far enough for me to see to go drive that next. Now, my older van, probably, 50 yards versus some of these new LED halogens, I think they go about 3 miles as mm-hmm. bright as they are coming at you. But I see enough to get me down. Then I go drive it into that, and lo and behold, my light's ahead of it. And so I don't know all the hows and the whys or how long it's going to take me, or am I going to have to stop at this stoplight? And is that going to be something that, all the stoplights, I got to stop at this one? Or is there going to be road construction at the corner of Piney Grove and Wilburn Road and 42 mm-hmm. that I sat in for about 25 minutes the other night? I mean, is it going to be those kind of things that if I'd known that, when I got in the car, I'd have gone a whole different way. But I mean, that's just using that little illustration of we see just enough, but you're never going to have all the hows and whys. But then when I get to the final destination, you know, I'll understand. Okay, Lord, so that's what you were doing.
Yeah, can I chime in on that?
Yeah.
always.
I do remember your sermon where you can't handle the truth.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah.
Of course, Leah messed it up.
Yeah.
Took his lot. But
I remember that. Now I know exactly the one.
Yeah. You can't handle the truth. I can't handle knowing
I can only handle what's here right now. I don't even understand what's going to happen tomorrow. I don't even know what's going to happen. But I do remember one time I was in a plane, and all I can see is inside the plane. And, or, you know, this room, I can't see anything up there. As I got higher, I could see more. And then I got higher, I could see these cars going this, well, you better stop here, because if you don't, this guy's going to slam right through you. Mm-hmm. And when I got up higher and higher, I could see a lot. And that's how God is. He's up here, but I'm down here. I just have to trust him that he's going to take care of today. I'm not going to worry about 2 miles down the road. Well, I don't say I'm not going to worry, because I have done that. I mean, by default, I always go backwards without God instead of going towards him. For some, you know, and when I try and do it on myself, I drift downward and not upward. Yeah. I think most of us are. So.
And that brings up an interesting point. I mean, you said, I'm not going to worry about the future. You're exactly right, because he tells us don't worry. Yeah. It's a sin. At the same time, there should be that concern, that thinking ahead, that, hey, but at the same time, don't take it on as worry. As much as I used to have a dear, dear godly friend that he used to say, I'm not worried, I'm just concerned. And I used to be like, is that just playing gymnastics?
Yeah.
But there's a difference. Yeah. And I knew what he was talking about. And so you're exactly right. I don't know the future. At the same time, I want to be mindful of it and be thinking ahead, because I think that's wisdom to some degree. But at the same time, Lord, I know where you're going. Just give me wisdom to know how to act and react and what you're doing.
Well, I think the thing that I see so much with my kids, especially Christian, just he's at that age. And I really, and I've talked before about how I see myself and my kids in their, some of it's just, you know, their DNA, but also in just seeing their interactions with me as a parent figure, I think of my interactions like that with God. And Christian's an easy one for me, because he's the one who's the most dependent, and that's the one that I'm trying to be most like, probably, and being the most dependent. And with Christian, he's sometimes at that age, you can really get in the way trying to help, right? Like,
right.
And that's, I think so many times that I'll say something to him and think God probably says that to me all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, get out of my way and let me handle it, or some version of that, or just listen to me and quit arguing with me.
Well, better yet, aren't you doing that yet?
Right. Yeah, that too.
Why am I having to do this?
Exactly. You being there on Thursday morning was really cool, because it gave us a different perspective. It was a change up from what we've been seeing in the last few weeks. There was something that you said that was just, it was really interesting to me. I wanted to kind of bring up here. After all of this study from mostly Revelation, but end of times and
you
other
guys
places.
Have been, what's the name of the study? The Great Disappearance?
Great Disappearance. There you go.
Okay.
There you go. The Great Disappearance.
David Jeremiah.
So you said, I don't necessarily, you know, is it going to be pre-trib rapture, post-trib, mid-trib, half-trib, partial trib? I don't really know. I just know Jesus wins in the end.
Yeah,
is kind of the way you said it. And I thought, I love the way you said it. Now, at the same time, I've sat through all these others, so I've obviously enjoyed the details too. But I thought about that, and I guess my takeaway is that, to you, that's really all that matters. And I've asked you deep questions before, and you'll talk about them. But it's like,
I can defend any of the ones you want to go with. And,
right.
You know, when's it going to come? How it's going to play out? I can tell you, okay, well, this is where this comes from. But look, the ones who knew the Bible the best when Jesus came on the earth the first time missed him the most.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm kind of like, I don't want to be so, this is the way it's got to be, because I leave it to God that he can do it about how he wants, and we still go back and say, oh, he was right. We just thought it was X.
Yeah. And, you know, and I get the pre-trip and all that. But let's leave, you know, I've always thought minor in the things that are minor, major in the things that are major.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly where I'm going with this, because then that kind of got me thinking, when you take the Bible, okay, and you can probably broadly – I'll try to do this quick, but you could probably lump things into three categories. There are some things that no matter how many times you read the Bible, we're not going to know certain things, okay? Like, there's just
there's going to be some mystery to it.
There's going to be some mystery to it. I mean, and I can think of, I like to use this real-world analogy. There's some things that we're not going to know, science or religion, whether even the scientists and the atheists, there's some things we're never going to know. Like, I don't think we're ever going to understand the size and magnitude of the universe. And there's a science behind that. The universe is expanding faster than the speed of light, so stuff's getting away from us faster than it can get back.
That's right.
All right, well, there are going to be some things we don't know about the physical universe. in the spiritual side, you know, I don't think we're ever going to fully understand why God didn't just make us all perfect like him and let us just stay in harmony in heaven and control us. We can have debates.
You can have answers but at the same time, yeah, that goes back to, you know, that in theology in years past, and when I say years past, centuries past, mm-hmm. There were scholars that would argue how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. Big deal, man. Exactly. Who cares? I mean, it's one of those of we can answer and ask all these questions, and I like to do it, and I like to discuss it. At the same time, man, does that really help me to go out and, one, witness, or number two, be the salt and the light? And I still want to know it and still want to study. That's why it's important to study. At the same time, I hope, my whole preference is, the reason we study prophecy is not so much so I can know every detail.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to know the one who is prophesying about.
Mm-hmm. So I think also within the Bible, there are a lot of breadcrumbs, if you will, and guidance and things that he does give guidance and points on. End of times is an example that you can point to something that says he might be talking pre-trib, rapture, post-trib.
Right.
Yeah.
You can point to something that says this may be okay, this may not be. This might be the right thing to do here, this might not. There are some areas there. And even within one church, two different pastors. Leo's much more into the details of of those types of things, and you're more, I don't know, I just know Jesus wins.
Right.
Kind of thing. Right. All right. So there's a lot of stuff in the Bible that could be subject to some interpretation, but you definitely know the general theme of where he's going with. And then there's some others that are staples you cannot deny, and right. It's because it's the Bible might not be 66 books long if he didn't repeat himself so many times, but there's some points he wants to drill into your head.
Absolutely.
Love, 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 and Christ is the only way.
Yep.
That those two, and I'm sure there's more than just that, but if he takes the time to be that repetitive over something, I think that might be the thing he's the most concerned about.
Yeah.
Now, ending my monologue, the thing that's ironic to me is we spend so much time fighting over this interpretation of this and this versus that, that we start to create salvation issues out of things that are not salvation issues, and saying that if you don't believe this, then you don't believe like me, and now you're wrong, and
you're not saved.
Right.
If you don't walk down the aisle, you're not saved.
That's right. And that's in total contradiction of the one thing that is important to him, which is love your neighbor.
Yeah. What is it? You can make a public profession.
That's right.
Walking down the aisle. I'm all right with it, but I don't think it's necessarily the right. You have to do
it's
that.
Not that for salvation.
Yeah, but people, I've heard pastors say that. Not pastors,
and you
make evangelists, public, I would say.
You know,
more
Jesus
evangelists.
Said, if you deny me before men,
I'll
deny. So I think there is kind of a making it known.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with that. I think what I'm hearing here, and I want to make sure I'm understanding, is, you know, when it comes to, there are some things that, hey, we have to agree on. Am I saved by grace through faith?
Mm-hmm.
You better believe it, mm-hmm. right? Is the Bible God's word? Yeah, we better stand firm on that one, because if we're not, then we're just adrift in a sea of whatever you want to make right. But then there come some things about, all right, the Lord's Supper. Does it need to be once a quarter, or are you supposed to do it this? All right, this is where I want to give liberty.
Mm-hmm.
In that is okay. That's how you interpret it. It doesn't mean that we're enemies, nor does it mean we're not brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I got a family. I got two brothers. I can go ahead and tell you, we're about as three opposite brothers as we can be. You'd think they'd be right, but oftentimes we're about as opposite as we can be, and we still love each other, and we may disagree. We may even be mad at each other.
Mm-hmm.
But we still love each other, but we can. We know that understanding. I know he's going to disagree with that, or that's just how he is.
So let me give an example of because there's 100 different varieties of this. I mean, there are, yes, Lord's Supper can be one, baptism can be another one, the walk, because I like to call it the walk,
right.
but the public profession of faith. There's so many things like that you can say, well, if you didn't do this or you did do this, that's. But then even some things that are known sins. I mean, like, we're not debating whether they're sins or not. The hot topic right now in society so much is the gender stuff and the sexual identifications and all these different types of things. You know, I want to be careful not to say this until I have thoroughly read and seen this, but there's a lot of issues that I think they're addressed in the Bible, but people turn them into this is an unforgivable sin, but right. this is a forgivable sin, but this isn't an unforgivable sin. This one, you well,
there's a pretty short list of unforgivable sins, yeah. right? I mean,
I can name one.
Right, there you go.
I only know one.
That's it.
I only know of one.
Yeah, okay. I can name one, and after that, I struggle.
Okay, so let me ask an open question here. It's rhetorical.
Okay.
We're all following God here. Do we still live in sin? Do we still have sin in our lives?
Absolutely.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, he never means you to be sinless.
Okay. So, but I'm not...
Yeah,
right. No. Do you, can you finish it? You're never meant to be sinless, but you should sin less.
Sin less, yeah.
Right. Absolutely.
But we're never going to be sinless. It's always going to be a struggle.
So, I think that you could take all kinds of different paths with this, but I think there's some people that are afraid to come to God because they're afraid of what all these going to make you change. That can be one part of this, but then another part of
it. He says count the cost.
Right.
I mean, there's,
yeah. And he's going to change.
Think about
We've talked about it. He's going to make you, he's going to make some changes.
Yeah.
But I think there's an awful lot too of, okay, well, all right, let's just pick any of the sexual sins if we want to and say, is it a sin? Yeah, it's a sin. So is a lot of other, so is what?
Gluttony.
Right.
Yeah.
So
gossip.
Well, even within the category of, God's very specific on how that is supposed to be. Man and a woman in marriage,
yeah.
okay?
Yeah.
He tells it.
There's probably a bunch of people doing things that are not okay by the biblical definition of it, that are judging other people that are doing things that are in the same category of sin, okay?
Yeah.
Like, if I'm sitting here breaking one of the physical sins and judging you for breaking a different one, that's the type of hypocrisy, I think, that gives Christians such a bad name, when at the end of the day, that's definitely in violation of the number one, right. which is loving and showing that Christ-like love towards others.
And you're right, you know, and I'm going to explain this, and Ben probably correct me. But
count on it.
That's the point. That's the gutter guards, right?
I'm just kidding.
But Romans, and of course Isaiah 2 says, we're all of sin. None of us are, we're all evil.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
It's just, are we more evil than another person? Well, you know, God is sinless, and he's so far off the charts, way beyond that we can imagine, that telling a lie versus homosexuality, when God sees it, it comes together. When we see it, because we're so, you know, we always want to rate ourselves. Like
scale 1 to 10.
Yeah. Like, Some Bin Laden, no way, yeah, he should be killed. And Billy Graham, man, I'm closer to him. You know, I'm better than that guy. But in the reality, God has no favoritism, and he loves everybody so much that he's so off the charts that it all is, there's really nothing different between any of us.
Yeah.
Now, I do know, when I first came to Christ, and like Ben says, you know, we should be sinning less. I'm keeping the top 10.
Mm-hmm. I love that last good. Week. That was so funny. You said, I keep the top 10. I'm good at that.
But I didn't realize that my thought process was not correct. But as I gotten older, I am a pretty evil, or, you know,
you're a pretty good breaker of the top 10 too, right?
Yeah, by my thoughts or by anything.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a white lie is really, it's not as bad as telling a real lie, but yes, there's some deception in a white lie. Yeah, you know, so I'm learning that as I've gotten older, that, man, I'm not doing too well.
Yeah,
you know, I've got a lot more improvement.
Yeah,
I don't want to say I'm getting closer to God. I mean, I'd like to say that, but I'm starting to realize what the true sin is, and it's not just, you know, the ones that you get arrested for, but it's our whole thought process.
Mm-hmm.
It's the battlefield of the mind is where we struggle at.
Yep.
At least I do.
And it's, I mean, Jesus in Matthew 5-7, Sermon on the Mount, he kind of puts a little bit more emphasis on, you know, I've heard you say, you know, he takes the law far past just your actions. Mm-hmm. It goes to the heart of the issue and your mind behind it. You don't commit adultery, but if you've lusted after another woman, you're guilty of it. So mm-hmm. you're exactly right. He takes it to a whole other level. I think one of the ways to think about this, and I want to be careful what I say, and I want to make sure that we say it and you hear everything I say. There are two ways to the Father. All right? Hear this out now. There are two ways to the Father. One is you keep the law perfectly, or Jesus Christ. This is impossible. So there's only one way to the Father. But that's why he tells the lawyer, what's the law say? Oh, the law says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, body, and soul. Love your neighbor as yourself. Go and do it. Mm-hmm. But that love is in a continuous, it's in the perfect tense, meaning it has to be always 24/7 perfectly done. Mm-hmm. And the law's there to show us, I can't do it 24/7.
Right.
But here's the whole thing that we're kind of getting at is every last one of us have broken the law.
Right.
And all of us, no matter if you sin a ton or you sin a little, depending on how you rate it, doesn't matter. We're all in the need of grace. And apart from grace, we're helpless. And apart from grace, we're hopeless. No matter who you are, whether you're Osama bin Laden, Hitler, or Billy Graham, or Charles Spurgeon.
And like he didn't actually say this, but I know he knows this, is if you break one little part of the law, you're guilty of the whole thing.
Yeah.
Where's that?
That's in Romans.
Yeah, it's in James 2, James 2:10.
Well, I thought you were quizzing me, but it wasn't.
Well, I was.
The first eight chapters of Romans is really his, I would say Romans, if there was a masterpiece of Paul's writings, Romans would probably be it. Mm-hmm.
There was something.
It's up there. Yeah. No, it is. You're right.
You said, was it Sunday that you brought up forgiving sin unconditionally, and how it's not just we're really quick to forgive people on the condition you don't do it again, and having conditional forgiveness.
Well, that was last Thursday.
That's what I was trying to.
In Isaiah, we talk about come, and God will abundantly pardon.
Okay.
Then the next verse says, for his ways are not our ways, nor his thoughts our thoughts. And people use that verse to kind of say, oh yeah, God does so many things so much different than we would. And I agree, he does. But that's not the context of what that verse means. That verse says, he forgives unlike us. His ways are not our ways. We tend to forgive and say, but don't you do it again. Or, I'll give you a little bit of grace, but man, if you cross me again, no, think about how many times God's forgiven me. And think about how many times, and how he forgave me, and why he forgave me. So much different than me. And so much different in my ways. And then we're told, Ephesians 4:31, Ephesians 4:32 really, is to forgive others just as God has forgiven you in Christ Jesus. Whew. So that is what that verse is getting at, is dealing with the context is a pardon and forgiveness.
Well, and back to what I said earlier about, or what you said on Sunday, living out the love of Christ every day.
Mm.
And I've looked back at, there is a point that I'm bringing like five different points together into this one, but when you're thinking about what does that mean? Live out the love of Christ every day. What are some examples of that, and how do I do that?
Yeah, I think that is this other 167. And I think it is, okay, let's look at what Christ did. Christ came to seek and to save that which was lost. So he had a heart for the lost. Mark 10:45, he did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for the many. So one is live the life of Christ would be one to have a heart for the lost, to be a servant. Look at how Christ never pushed himself to the front of, look at who I am. It was always a humility. And I think it's that humble walk with the Lord, that humble serving others, that humbleness that says, okay, whose life can I impact today, Lord? And Lord, I want to be used by you. And so when you look at how Christ lived his life, that's kind of what we're talking about. Jesus at the end of his ministry, and he's about to go to the cross, he tells the disciples, it's good that I go away. How is that possible? Jesus, you are on earth. We have you right here with us. And he says, it's better for you that I would go away. Why? Because he goes away and he sends the Holy Spirit. So now, what one person, Jesus, could do right in that area, now he should have hundreds of thousands that are going and doing what he did.
And so what does it mean to be a disciple? It means to be a Christ follower. Well, what does it mean to be a Christ follower? It is to live like he lived and to love like he lived. So it's all about, to me, it's all about the sacrifice, and it's all about putting others in front of yourself. I think that's what I would kind of, if you could sum up to live Christ-like is really how it is, but there's a lot that goes into that.
Well, I thought of something when you said about Jesus. How can that be when Jesus said, for me to go is best for you?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, well, you know, Jesus had to go because physically he couldn't do well in all of us at one time.
It's that, and then it's best for me to go is I'm paying for your sin.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah.
Number two is, the Holy Spirit's going to come. Right. It's the cup. That's the context. Is the Holy Spirit's going to come, and ministry's going to multiply.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and when you think about the way we forgive, what you were talking about on Thursday about that conditional forgiveness, that's one that has hit me. And you talk about sins as you get closer to God, you're starting to almost feel worse about yourself in ways.
I feel that I'm not worthy of it, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look,
I haven't gotten to the worst point.
That's a better way of putting it. I like that better. But I look back now and see so many times and that I've had that condescension. I'm sorry, the condescension with people when I'm forgiven. It's like, well, I'll forgive you, but you're lucky that I'm forgiving you, aren't you?
Right.
You sure are lucky that I'm a forgiving person. Kind of mindset. Come, is there anything less?
Come grovel at my feet and ask for forgiveness.
Yeah, exactly. There's very few things you can do that are less Christ-like than that.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, it's like that. That's not how he forgave. He forgave with a love. I mean, it's not just that I'm doing it because that's what the Bible says I have to do, right? I mean, it's loving the person you're forgiving, and that's it's hard you can't do it without him. There's no way you can do it without him. But when you can experience that feeling, boy, it does. I mean, it makes you feel small in a good way, almost. Right. It's a strange.
Well, I know one time, and I had a hard time forgiving somebody. You know, my thing was forgive, but not forget. You know, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, because he hurt me, and that's what's so hard about forgiving is because you've been hurt. And humiliated, and so, but over it took. Oh my goodness! It took 2 or 3 years at least.
Yep.
It should have only taken me one day, or it shouldn't have taken me no time. But my heart had to come around. You know, I had to get to the right place to be able to forgive, and that person probably didn't even think about it. Had probably never thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
But it took me a while to get in that place where I was able and I could forgive. So sometimes it takes a long time. Sometimes it might take a lifetime. I don't know. I haven't experienced that yet. I'm still alive. So.
And it's amazing. And I don't know that this is anything biblical that I'm about to say, but it's amazing what we can get offended at.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've had folks get mad at me for I mean, really. And honestly, I've done the same too. Is we get upset at just some of the silliest little things. And I don't know your situation. It could have been something major. But amazing how, and I've dealt with families and counseled families that wouldn't forgive each other. And it was something as simple as something that was said at a meal 25 years ago. I make the joke that, you know, and I did. I had a family that was mad at each other over some chicken legs. And fried chicken legs, and it became you had sisters that wouldn't talk to each other because of just something silly. And it's amazing that we will throw away some relationships because of, okay, you made me mad. And it's almost like, well, golly, are we 2 years old again?
Mm-hmm.
What? And also, if you don't forgive, you're the one that's hurting. You're the one that's suffering. You're the one that has the bitterness.
How many times do you think, as a pastor, struggling to forgive somebody else could be a major, major headwind to finding God and being able to have that relationship where you want to be with God? So maybe what I'm asking is, as a pastor, how much do you see that with a barrier coming between?
Oh, I think it's legit. I think that's one of the reasons in the Sermon on the Mount again, Jesus says, hey, if you know somebody has something against you, leave the gift at the altar. Go make it right and then come back. Because Well, think about it. You've got two or three kids. I got two or three kids. You got three. I got three. And if they're not getting along, daddy ain't happy about that. Mm-mm. I mean, if they're in there fussing and fighting, and I'm going to play the old, dad's just trying to rest and read the paper. Dad's just trying to get something done. And they're in there fussing and fighting. Man, that right there, oh, goodness gracious. Well, think about it. Your Heavenly Father's looking down, and he sees two of his children that can't get along because of something silly. Yeah, you think that's going to impact not necessarily the relationship as much as fellowship. You know, I don't think now you're disqualified from being my child. No, that's not the way God grace works. But there is going to mess up that fellowship that I'm not as close to him as I was, or... You know, or as Psalm 66:18, if I regard iniquity in my heart, the Lord does not hear me. So, yeah, there's got to be that. That's a barrier.
He's got to cause some static on that frequency, that radio that you're talking about getting on the right frequency. Yeah, it's got to cause some static. Yeah,
you're tuning in. You're inside a brick building.
Yeah, because you want to talk about. I wish my two older kids were here because they could weigh in on this big time, because they have gotten yelled at for that very thing more in the last 6 months than
I could. You're brothers and sisters.
I've quit trying to pick a winner. Right? Like they were fighting the other night. Mm. And I walked in there and I said, I do not care. Yeah. I mean, I've. That some of my own sin probably comes from what I say when that's going on, but no, I think that you could go all kinds of different ways with that. But I think that back to, I mean, again, gluttony versus homosexuality, or substance abuse versus not forgiving other people. There's so many different sins.
Sin is sin. It gets in your heart.
Yeah. We like to get into this contest of who's done right and wrong.
I'm not as bad as you.
Right.
Yeah. The comparing game.
Comparing game. And it's especially... It's one thing to look at other people's sins that way and that self-righteousness, but that forgiving side, when you're the victim of it or you're the one who's feeling the pain from that,
right,
it's so much easier to start to judge their sin worse than your sin.
Sure. Yeah. Well, yeah. You get blinded by yours. You know, sometimes I hesitate on giving my testimony, because I don't want people to think that, you know, I don't want them to do the comparing game. I don't want to think, well, I didn't do that.
Right. You know,
there's hope for me. Well,
right.
Well, that might be good. There's hope for me. You know, yeah. But, you know, a lot of times we just love to compare. You know, I'm not that bad. I'm a pretty good person. Because we all want to be pretty good people. Yeah. We all, I would say 99% of the people think they're good people. Mm-hmm. And you can see, man, they don't. I don't know how they get that, but, you know.
Well, and it goes back. That's the whole thing is, what's going to be your standard?
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of ties into what we talked about at the beginning. God's mm-hmm. standard is perfection. All right, so I know I can't reach perfection. What did the lawyer do? Well, who's my neighbor?
Yeah.
Let's bring that standard down to where I know, oh, I can clear that bar. You might not be able to clear it, but I can clear it, and that's all I'm worried about. And by the way, if I've got to clear it, it might help me that you can't. So therefore, I'm going to judge you as, well, you're not as good as I am, or looking down at you. So that's really how that works. That's why the lawyer, the Pharisee in the scriptures, they're always doing that. They're bringing God's standard down to where, okay, I can do that. Oh, but that tax collector, that sinner, that drinker, that prostitute and all that, look at them. Don't have anything to do with them.
And in this world today, you know, bringing the bar down, well, I think the bar is already on the ground, don't you?
No, well, we bring it lower and lower.
Yeah. I mean,
and
it's on the ground.
The more that you want to say there's no God, or, you know, that you want to make up your own God, the standard gets dropped all the way down to where it's below the ground, if you will.
Yeah, right.
But I think that's a domino effect in itself, because the reason that the world is what it is right now is because there's not a lot of people that have, or at least as a percentage of the population, that have a real connection and real relationship with God is shrinking. So there's
more darkness.
There's more darkness.
There's not as much light.
And a lot of that comes from just having a skewed understanding of what God really is and what that love. We misrepresent.
We don't even understand it.
We really
don't.
So
how's the world going to do it?
Yeah. But if you had just a few people sharing the actual way Jesus was, I mean, that can go a really long way when you look at what he could do with that. I mean, just one person, look what he did. But there's just not, we're so interested in showing everybody else what they're doing wrong.
Right.
And but here's the other thing about that, too. it's not as simple as just, especially forgive. Some of these are heart matters, right? I can say I forgive you. I can say I forgive you.
All of problems are heart matters, really, when you get down to it.
Yeah. Right. So I can say, I mean, pick a sin, honestly. I mean, you can pick any sin, but I can say, okay, I'm going to forgive this person.
Okay.
I'll tell them I forgive them. I can even say it with a smile on my face. I can be go to an acting class if I have to, and I can nail it so they believe it. Everybody can believe it. And I can go home at night and gnash my teeth and people and just hate them.
Yeah.
Or you can't just control it and flip a switch and say, now I forgive that person exactly the way Christ did without him.
Right.
But
I agree.
The interesting thing about it is, well, then that makes my prayers a lot easier because now I just have to ask for his guidance in everything that I do. And now we're back to the real relationship and having him dwell in you. Because he can do stuff where you didn't even... I wasn't even aware of sins that he's fixed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's improved or he's cleaned up areas in my life I didn't even realize were dirty from just having him there to point them out.
And one of my favorite books that I'm trying to remember the author, and I'll have to find it for you, but the title was so catchy that I was like, man, I want to read that. And it was called The Heart of the Problem.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the part of the problem. It's the problem of the heart.
Yeah.
Because all these sins, gluttony, homosexuality, throw it in there. It all goes back to a heart that is fallen away or wayward from God's standard.
Mm-hmm.
Even idolatry for the Old Testament, when the nation of Israel was constantly, God was calling them back because it wasn't just because they were bowing down to an idol. No, it's because their hearts had gone away from God. And when your heart goes away from God, that's when you're going to do idol worship or you might do something else. And so it all goes back to that problem of the heart. That's why Proverbs 4:23 says, guard your heart, because out of it flows the wellsprings of life. In other words, it's what drives your life. And so you want to guard that heart of making sure, okay, Lord, I don't want any impure way in me. Search me and make sure there's not. Or, Lord, let me be a pure heart. And again, that's hard because, again, when we talk about pure motives, pure attitude, pure behavior, man, that is you. And I think the thing of it is, what is it that makes us want to have those pure motives, attitudes, thoughts, behaviors? Is the hope that we have.
Mm-hmm.
That if I know I've got heaven promised and I know I'm going to be like him, 1 John 3:3 says, since we have this fixed hope, we purify ourselves. Meaning, and again, it's, I hate that it says, well, I don't hate it, but we purify ourselves makes it sound like, okay, that's something I got to do. No, what he's talking about there is now we begin to live those lives that are surrendered, and we make sure, Lord, search me and make sure there be no wicked way in us.
Yeah. Okay.
He covered it.
Oh, wow, look at that.
He did. First time.
Yeah, man.
Good.
I'm getting better.
Good job.
Thank you. I'm getting better.
My kids help me with all this more than anything because there's so many things that I look at them do, and I'm just like, I could choke them sometimes for the stuff they're doing, and I realize I do the same thing.
You see yourself, and you see your shortcomings. You see, hey, that must be exactly what God thinks of me sometimes when I do that.
Yeah.
I'll say this, you know, I can't get my mind off myself to really talk about other people. Because I know I'm bad. I mean, I know that there's, the scriptures also tells me that too.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah.
Don't take much convincing.
Yeah,
does it? I can agree with.
But, you know, and a lot of people think, this is something that's always strange to me. A lot of people think they're good people.
Right.
But there's no good people in heaven. They're all saved. All good people are in hell.
Yeah.
All bad people in hell. The only people that are in heaven are the ones that accepted Jesus Christ. Or, accepted Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior.
Yeah. I love the way you said it earlier and also on Sunday. I mean, it's there's two ways, I guess, but it's like
one's
saying...
One's impossible, so
right.
Let's just get one.
Well, it's kind of like saying... The way you get to heaven is to dunk a basketball in a 25-foot goal.
That's right.
And it's basically, okay, well, define feet. You know, are we talking, is a foot this long or this long?
That's right.
How can we take what you just said and make it not impossible?
Foot,
right.
And, oh my goodness, I know I can't dunk a basketball at 25 foot, so I got to have somebody.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody can actually jump 25 feet other than David
Thompson.
Even
the best part misses the mark.
Shout out
and that's
David.
Why... I don't think you're allowed but one shout out to state per show. Per show.
That's an awfully Carolina blue looking shirt you got on today.
There. Yeah, my alma mater.
He knows what, like at the deacon's meeting, he seems, I think he's in the closet about that.
He's in the closet.
About Carolina. Speaking of forgiveness,
he knows a lot about Carolina, but he.
Speaking of forgiving and loving your brother, we're about to have a fight here. Y'all see a preacher get mad.
They called me out on that Sunday in the deacon's meeting.
It was funny.
Yeah, I think you must have some Carolina ties. And I'm like, no.
You got some connections.
He's a Carolina closet fan.
There you go. There you go. Well, we'll discuss my compensation after the show to not name this a closet Carolina fan. Yeah. I might name it.
Don't say come out the closet. Yeah.
Ooh, it's getting deep. We better end it up.
Good time.
Thank y'all. Appreciate it.
All right.